RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Just over 2 weeks ago, you might remember we had Mike Shaw and Bruce Gillard from NZTSOS on the program, New Zealand Teachers Speak Out on Science. And in that chat, we were talking about bombshell discovery information of a science and insights report that upended the claimed basis for vaccine mandates for teachers. That was really interesting. Now, Bruce Gillard is back with us, researcher for NZTSOS. Bruce, thanks for coming back to RCR.
Good morning, Paul. Good to be back.
Yeah, great to have you. Okay, we thought that we needed to talk about the Supreme Court's decision to dismiss NZTSOS grounds for appeal in the court case about vaccine mandates for teachers. We want to go through some of the details. So is that okay with you?
That sounds good.
Can you give us some background again for those who weren't listening then? If they were, they probably have an idea from that last chat what we're about to talk about. So, but just fill us in again a bit to bring us up to date before we start going through the meat of it.
Okay, well, NZTSOS went to the High Court and we lost. And we then appealed to the Court of Appeal and we lost there. And we have then been seeking leave to go to the Supreme Court. Now, there's no automatic right of entry to the Supreme Court. You need to seek leave and they consider your reasons and then either let you appeal to them or dismiss your appeal. And our appeal has been dismissed. Now, in the last little while, we have found these documents, the secondary attack rate document, which we talked about last time, where the government knew that the rate of infection in schools or transmission in schools was incredibly low. And that was one of the grounds we used for our appeal to the Supreme Court. We also found between our appeal court and now the fact that the government had also disguised the number of applications that were granted for the significant service disruption exemptions. They had told the High Court that only 11 applications had been approved, and we have subsequently found out that nearly 3,000 people were included in those 11 applications.
So they were bunched together in what looked like on the surface a small number of applications, but that was just a little tip of the iceberg right underneath thousands of people involved.
Yeah, well, it was true. There were 11 applications approved, but they didn't tell the court that even just one of those applications counted for 931 people.
Right.
And altogether, there was nearly 3,000 people included in those 11 applications. And so while the government was dismissing many fine nurses and midwives, at the same time, the health services were giving exemptions to maintain their service to many, potentially thousands of other workers, unbeknown to anyone.
Yeah. Now, those numbers that we talked about last time showed, because that was the whole point of the mandates, wasn't it? Because of transmission and the vulnerability of schools, health workplaces, and they knew well in advance from the information that they had that the risk of transmission in those areas was so far below what you'd have in the home, right? In your average home.
Absolutely. They had been tracking all the COVID cases from August through to October with all their contact tracing data. They had about 40,000 contacts and 11,000 of those contacts had come from education services. And yet in all those 11,000 contacts of an infected person, only about 14 of those contacts got infected.
Incredible.
And the secondary attack rate worked out to be 0.1% transmission rate. If it's much lower than that, it'd be almost non-detectable.
Yeah.
The health service, it was 0.2%, twice as much, but still incredibly low. And the government, knowing that, went ahead with the mandate. That was bad enough. Even worse, when we got to the High Court, the expert witnesses for the Crown did not inform the High Court that they knew of this information. And we maintain that they had a duty under the rules of expert witnesses, which are basically bound to be impartial, independent advocates to the court, assist the court in its determination independently and impartially we maintain that those expert witnesses had a duty to the court to tell them about this transmission data, which was the Ministry of Health's own data, which was the most relevant bit of data concerning transmission in New Zealand schools that was available at the time, possibly ever been available, and yet they did not tell this to the court. And so that was one of the things that we believed also contributed to a miscarriage of justice in our case.
Yeah. Have you given any thought, we might have touched on this last time we chatted, I can't quite remember exactly some of the points, but why in the face of that data, those decisions were still made? They must have had another reason to move ahead, to go ahead still.
Well, I think this data was determined by the Ministry of Health. And it was not the Ministry of Health that was pushing for the mandate. The education worker mandate was being pushed for by the Ministry of Education.
Right.
The Ministry of Education officials had been talking with the unions. They approached Hipkins with the idea of mandating all education workers to be vaccinated on Monday, the 4th of October.
So the union approached Hipkins, is that what you say?
What we're saying is that the unions and the education officials had discussed the idea amongst themselves. Then the education officials brought the idea to Hipkins on right. the 4th of October. 1 week later, Cabinet agreed to mandate all education workers. 1 week, insufficient time to do any analysis from anything. And that's part of the whole, this NZT SOS case is so clear cut. If they can get away doing this to the teachers, there's almost nothing they could not get away with doing. Because there's no input, no public health input from the Ministry of Health concerning this. There was no analysis of other things that could have been done as to what effect they might have had. There was no analysis of what the impact might be of having 5% of teachers unvaccinated. When you think about it, the Ministry of Health knew that there was such a low transmission rate. What's the difference of having 5% of teachers unvaccinated with a vaccine that only has about 50% effectiveness at best? The whole thing is ludicrous. And yet they went ahead and demolished the careers of many fine teachers all for nothing.
So that was a political virtue signal in the end, I'm thinking. Anyway, you can't have the House of Cards fall on that.
I think so. They needed something to try to encourage people to get kids back to school.
Yeah.
Get kids back to school because there were many parents that were scared. They'd been told the sky is falling, and they were all scared. They stayed away from school, and now they needed something. The Ministry of Education wanted something to get the kids back to school that they could say to everyone, the sky is no longer falling. We've taken care of it. We're vaccinating teachers. I think that's the motive behind it.
What they could have said, if they're honest, though, is, the safest place to be is at school, according to our numbers, safer than the home. But they couldn't say that, could they?
They couldn't have, no, because that would have undermined the whole narrative of what they were trying to do to get everyone vaccinated.
Yeah. Okay, tell us about the grounds that you sought leave to appeal to the Supreme Court, and on what grounds were they dismissed?
Well, there were four grounds in total. The first three are more legal, technical grounds. And to meet the standard for the Supreme Court, they need to be grounds that are of general or public interest. And so it's not just re-looking at or relitigating cases. They need to be things to do with the law that have general or public interest to them. And we believe there were three legal grounds that did have a public interest. I won't go into all of them, but things, for example, like to what degree must the Crown investigate the alternatives that are less rights limiting before they bring in a measure. So that was sort of one of the grounds that we thought, because the Crown had done nothing to investigate or have any detail of any investigation into other means such as rapid antigen testing. So there's no rapid antigen testing required. There was no social distancing required of teachers and things. And so the whole thing was not considered. They rushed ahead with the vaccine mandate without considering these alternatives. And so we wanted the Supreme Court to give us some decisions as to what degree of investigation into alternatives should there be done before this can be considered to be a a demonstrably justified intervention, because the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act, it basically says that for something to be justified, there needs to be demonstrable justification. It's not just it's justified in the mind of the government, but they must be able to demonstrate that it is reasonable and justified. And we maintained if they could not do that, if they have not demonstrated doing that, then the Supreme Court should be able to make some ruling as to how much is required as far as investigating the alternatives to vaccination. And the same with the precautionary principle is another one. The government argued that the sky is falling. Anything we do is okay because the sky is falling on us. Everyone's getting transmitting the virus around. Anything we do is okay. And the courts have basically bought into that. They applied what they call the precautionary principle. They said we can't decide on the science, but because the sky might be falling, we need to be careful, and therefore the government can do whatever it likes, basically, because the sky has fallen. And so that precautionary principle has been applied. It is not mentioned in the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act. It is mentioned in other legislation, but it's not mentioned in the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act. So we thought that the Supreme Court might want to give some guidance for the future as to whether the precautionary principle is a valid thing to consider in the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act. But those three legal grounds were all basically dismissed. And the interesting thing is that when the Supreme Court dismisses them, they say, we add that whether there is a question of general or public importance must be assessed against the fact that it is now over 2 years since the mandate was removed. And we question, why is that relevant? Why is the passage of 2 years relevant to a question of justice?
Yeah.
There are many teachers who are still hurting, who might be able to seek some degree of damages or recompense if this was declared unlawful. And the other thing is that of those 2 years, virtually one of those years, we were waiting for the Court of Appeal to give us a judgment.
Yeah, so the clock was running out already on it.
We waited for 11 months for a judgment to come in. And so NZT SOS has been doing everything as fast as possible. We haven't been dragging the chain. And so the question of being 2 years, so what, is our response to that.
And 2 years in the time span of something as momentous as this anyway is nothing.
It's nothing.
It's still fresh.
Absolutely. People's lives have been permanently, you know, impacted by this and continue to be impacted. And so 2 years is nothing. So those were our three legal grounds. The fourth grounds for our appeal was that we believe there was a miscarriage of justice based upon the fact that the Crown had not revealed the secondary, the significant service disruption exemptions and the low rate of transmission inside schools. And again, that is dismissed by the Supreme Court. They say, nor are we persuaded that there may have been a miscarriage of justice. And they go on to say, we observe that these points appear not to have been raised in the Court of Appeal, though they could have been. And that is really strange, because how would they expect us to raise these with the Court of Appeal when the government effectively had hit them? And we've only got this information through OIA requests between our hearing in the Court of Appeal and now.
That should have been the slam dunk of it all, shouldn't it? Shouldn't it have been?
Well, it shouldn't, yeah. It should, like, they're putting the onus on us. We should have told the Court of Appeal about it before. We didn't
But you didn't know. No one knew.
No one knew, except the Crown did know.
Yeah, who were hiding it.
And the Crown should have told the High Court about it. And that's the whole issue as to the miscarriage of justice.
Yeah, of course, it makes perfect sense.
For them sort of almost saying that we could have done it with the Court of Appeal, sorry, we couldn't have done it then because we did not know about it then, because we did not have the information, because the Crown was still basically keeping it under wraps.
Yeah, okay, so that doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to us, but I guess there's nothing more we can do. The Supreme Court justices have made their decision, and that is the end of the matter in this case. There's no further avenues that we can go to pursue this litigation, unfortunately.
Well, it is a miscarriage of justice, isn't it?
Well, in our opinion, it definitely is.
Well, it feels like it to the common person, that's me. It's pretty clear cut.
It's a miscarriage of justice for us, but there's a bigger picture too. It is so sad for everyone in New Zealand that our Bill of Rights has effectively been gutted.
Yeah.
Because if they can get away with doing this to the teachers with so little analysis before they've kicked in this draconian mandate, they can effectively do anything. They just need to convince the court that the sky is falling again, and anything goes.
So there's no other avenue to take it any further. That's it, is it?
With this matter, that is it.
Oh, dear. So that leaves anyone adversely affected by those mandates and the hiding of that data ultimately in the lurch still.
Absolutely. There's nothing more we can do on the legal front in this matter. There may be other legal avenues that could be pursued, but the trouble is, like, in some ways it's good that the Supreme Court has revealed their what they've said here, because we believe there's a degree of bias coming through here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you thought that. Yeah.
Which, in some ways, at least we haven't wasted a whole lot of time going through a trial with or a hearing with the Supreme Court, which would cost a lot of time, energy, and money to get there, only to be, you know, again, turned back because of some potential bias or favour for the government.
So they've outed themselves.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, Paul, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Have you done any thinking, Bruce, as to why? Why?
Well, I think it's always hard for the courts to go against the Crown. And I think, like, there's a can of worms here as well. There's a very big can of worms that comes down to the very fact of expert witnesses and what biased testimony might be provided and what should be provided. And those same expert witnesses were expert witnesses in almost all of the High Court hearings for the aviation workers, doctors, teachers, midwives. There were many hearings, and the same expert witnesses for the Crown were the expert witnesses in most of those hearings.
Yeah.
And so for them to expose some potential problem with our case, the ramifications are probably just too big. And so I think there's a very big incentive to just basically keep the can on the worms and hope the problem will go away.
Yeah, but you don't expect learned justices in the Supreme Court to buy into that, do you?
Well, we would hope not. We would hope not.
But they have.
Well, that's, I guess, for people to decide, you know, what is the basis here? It's from our perspective. Now, we are biased ourselves, I guess. So we are.
Yeah. But it's that information, Bruce. That's the kicker.
I think so. That information, again, stands by itself. Show us where the information we've got here somehow is an error. I guess that's where our attention now may be turning more to political front. If the legal front is biased, there's the second
phase two of the inquiry.
Yeah, phase two of the COVID commission coming up. But again, how long will that be? And as I sort of said last time, you know, there's no reason why the government cannot intervene before that. Like, Winston Peters knew about the significant service disruption exemptions before the election, because he talked about the fact that there had been 11,000 health workers given the exemptions. He knew about it. He knows about it. New Zealand First, they know about these things. What are we doing about it?
Very good questions.
If they are unsure about the secondary attack rate report, well, I've sent them a copy of it. Look in your inbox. Have a look at it. Get back to us. Discuss it. Again, we don't need to wait for another year or two or three for some COVID commission to start to make some recommendations. The government now has access to all this information, and it shouldn't be up to us to continue to have to put in tedious Official Information Act requests, like drawing teeth, trying to get the information out bit by bit. They should be able to open the books and expose the deception or deceit, if there is deception or deceit there, that needs to be exposed. Bring it to the light of day and do what is right.
And it is relevant still, isn't it, Bruce? Because now there's the bird flu pandemic being talked about, and who's to say that this all won't happen in this way and more again?
Well, that's the thing with the new pandemic plan that's being sort of proposed.
It's horrible, yeah.
Again, if it's so relevant to that, because if they can get away with the old one, they can get away with this next one as well.
And they know they've got away with it, they, because the Supreme Court did what they did to you.
Yep. They haven't wanted to go any further. They want to just basically dismiss us and hope we'll go away, I think.
Well, I'm feeling my blood pressure is up. How about yours?
Well, as I said, I'm in some ways quite glad that we don't have to go through all the drama of preparing things for what may well have been a bad decision at the end of the day. And I guess my focus now will be on just continuing to get the information and put it before our politicians and hope that there's someone there with integrity and courage to actually stand up and do what is right.
So the teacher unions, it's NZEI and PPTA, they colluded somehow in this. They're supposed to represent their paid-up members, right?
They were in discussions with the Ministry of Education, and based upon those discussions, the Ministry of Education brought the recommendation to HIPCOMS. And that is why, as I said before, many teachers, when they were being terminated, and they were terminated without any redundancy payments, they got their holiday pay, and that was it.
That's disgusting.
And so many teachers with many years of dedicated service. Now, teaching is not the highest paid job in the world.
No.
And the teachers I've worked with have been so dedicated, by and large. There's the odd one amongst them, not, but most, by and large, are very dedicated, giving up their lunch times after school for students. They have a heart and a passion to help their students. And suddenly, out of nowhere, comes this mandate. And many were appealing to the unions, you know, help us here, this is not right.
Yeah.
But they did not know at the time, as we know now, that the unions had actually helped recommend this to the government.
Wow. All right, Bruce, thanks for coming on and sort of clarifying that. We had knowledge of that before from our last chat, but to hear it put again in the way you have, it leaves a nasty, well, I'm not a teacher, but it leaves a nasty taste in the mouth for me, I tell you.
As it does with many, I think, Paul.
Yeah. All right. Bruce Gillard, researcher for NZTSOS. Thanks for coming back on RCR, Bruce. Great work. And what would you say to our listeners? Because you're talking about, you know, trying to get this out, let's say, to, I don't know, anyone who counts, NZ First politicians, anyone who can bring some pressure to bear for some other, I don't know, way of making sure this at least never happens again. What, share? Write to people. Have you got the OIA material on the NZTSOS website? Can they forward that to people?
It's not there yet, I don't think, no, but we can put information up on there.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, just public pressure. You know, politicians by and large are very vulnerable to public pressure. They are wanting, you know, they do things based upon popularity and whatever. So I think, yeah, public pressure is probably the way now to go.
Well, the Bill of Rights needs to be clarified somehow or strengthened, doesn't it, if it's not worth the paper it's written on ultimately?
Yeah, well, at the moment, the Bill of Rights, as it's written, should be okay if the courts have the courage to uphold it, but they haven't.
Okay, courage.
But now we have precedent that basically sets it as being worth very little. Yeah. And so a new Bill of Rights may well be something that they need to consider as well.
New Bill of Rights, yeah. Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, Paul.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.